Thank you to the San Francisco Mime Troupe, and hello, Vietnam. Hello, San Francisco. This is Paul Kangas, your host on Reality Sandwich, the continuing investigation into the assassinations of Dr. Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy, and Malcolm X. It seems like there's more connections to it than we first realized. The new film, the Malcolm X film, it makes it very clear the connections between the assassination of John Kennedy and the assassination of Malcolm X, a point many people missed over the years, but is now being made perfectly clear by Spike Lee. The next part of the program is an interview with a man named John Barber, who interviewed Jim Garrison several years ago and has produced a thrilling, exciting documentary on the investigation Jim Garrison did into the Kennedy assassination. It's like a companion piece with the Oliver Stone's great movie on JFK. So I highly recommend you check into John Barber's new piece called The Garrison Tapes. It showed recently at the Roxy, and a lot of people really enjoyed it. So I went down and interviewed the producer and director of The Garrison Tapes. By the way, the film will be shown on television in December. Check your local listings for December, and you'll be able to see The Garrison Tapes for free if you missed it at the Roxy. And now, without further ado, here is John Barber being interviewed at the Roxy Theater on the Kennedy assassination. John, how did you first get involved in producing this film?
Paul, I first talked to Jim Garrison quite by accident 22 years ago. I was the host of a morning show on the ABC station in Los Angeles called AM Los Angeles. It was a live call-in news information show. Like most Americans, I believe my government, when they described Garrison in the same way they described Oswald, as a lone nut, until quite by accident in 1970, I picked up a book called Heritage of Stone, which was Jim Garrison's recounting of the Clay Shaw trial. And even though I was somebody who'd worked in news, I was still amazed at the information and the evidence and the witnesses he'd called into a courtroom in New Orleans that we'd never heard of. So I called him in New Orleans, Paul, and I said, "Hi, Mr. Garrison, my name's John Barber. I just finished reading your book." And he chuckled a little bit, and he said, "Oh, you're the other one." He said, "I only sold two copies." And so I said, "Well, maybe you'll sell more, because I'd like to have you on the show. Would you do it? And how soon could you get here?" And he said, "I'll be there whenever you want, but I'll be surprised if you get away with it." And I said, Mr. Garrison's the highest rated show in L.A. We've had the governor on. I won my first Emmy here. But he was right. I was fired from the show, and Jim Garrison was canceled from the show. I subsequently ended up at NBC as their media critic, the film critic for Los Angeles Magazine. I won 5 more Emmys. And then in 1979, I got a show on NBC that I'd created called Real People. I was the producer, the creator, the writer, one of the co-hosts. In that same year, the House Select Committee on Assassinations concluded 4 shots had been fired. There had been a conspiracy in the killings of John Kennedy and Martin Luther King, turned their findings over to the Justice Department and asked them to reopen, which they didn't. But in any event, I called Garrison, who is now a judge, and I said, "Judge, do you feel vindicated?" He said, "John, I feel like a blind man who's gotten a small trophy in a dark room. Only I know I got it." And I said, "Well, someday, Jim, somebody's going to tell your story, and I'd like it to be me." A year later, Real People was the number one hit show on American television. It was the grandfather of all those reality shows, and I had enough money, so I took a crew to New Orleans, and Paul, I put Garrison on camera for 2.5 hours. He detailed his case, he named names. It was staggering. So when I got back to L.A., rather than doing a 6-minute Real People story, I wanted to do a 96-minute story, a documentary, and no one would talk to me, in spite of the fact that I was responsible for the most successful show on American television. I was subsequently removed from the show, never got to tell Garrison's story, and only by accident, when Oliver Stone announced he was going to make the film, did I get enough money to be able to do the documentary.
One of the important questions many of the people seem to be asking now is, or like Jim Maher, I guess, started the question is, if you ask why Kennedy was killed, you can figure out who did it. In the process of interviewing Garrison, do you go into why Kennedy was killed?
Yes, and Jim is very explicit, and he said that that a coup d'etat was not the intent, but the coup d'etat was the result, because what they wanted to do was change Kennedy's foreign policy vis-a-vis Vietnam, which Lyndon Johnson did within 72 hours.
Right, right. And in the process of interviewing Garrison, did Garrison go through changes as he was developing his case, where he became more aware of the direction his investigation was going?
The couple of things that are very startling about Garrison. First of all, he was district attorney of New Orleans. Here was a man who was for the war in Vietnam. Here was a man who was a colonel in the Air Force Reserve. Always respected authority, but he was doing his job. He heard Oswald was in New Orleans, so he started to track down some of Oswald's associates and came across this guy, David Ferry. And he was told by an employee of Guy Bannister's, that named Jack Martin, that David Ferry had gone to Houston and Galveston the afternoon of the assassination in a thunderstorm. So Garrison picked him up, asked Ferry what he was doing. He found out that Ferry's background was that he was a CIA pilot. But Ferry told him he was there to ice skate. So Jim thought that was a little suspicious, and he turned him over to the FBI. The FBI released Ferry with a public apology for the DA's having detained him. In any event, in spite of that, Garrison forgot all about it for 3 years. He believed the Warren Commission report, totally, that Lee Harvey Oswald was a lone assassin, until an accidental meeting with Senator Russell Long. And Long told him on a plane, he says, "I don't think that kid could have done it alone." So what Garrison did is he got 3 sets of the 26 volumes of the Warren Report. And Lou Ivan, his chief investigator, tells us on camera in the documentary, he said he had a set in the car, he had a set at home, and he had a set in the office. And it was only from reading the Warren Commission report, their own evidence, that he decided he had no choice but to reopen the case.
Now, have you seen the new movie on Malcolm X?
No, I haven't.
It's really startling. I don't know if you're aware that the split between the Muslims, the Nation of Islam, and Malcolm happened because of what Malcolm was saying about the assassination of John Kennedy.
I didn't know that, and I'd be curious to see that in the film.
Yeah, it's a major part of the film, and as a matter of fact, the reviewers on television are saying things like, "I don't get it. What's the John Kennedy assassination doing right in the middle of the Malcolm X movie. I don't get it. And it's just real that they don't understand that this political split happened over this very question, that the facts, that what Malcolm was saying caused the nation to get upset with him and a lot of other people and resulted in his own assassination.
Well, you'll notice, and everyone else will notice, that historically everyone who began to take a position against the war in Vietnam publicly, who was a strong public figure, was eliminated from the national scene. Robert Kennedy's office had a liaison to Jim Garrison during the trial, and Garrison was informed that Bobby Kennedy was concerned that there were guns between him and the White House, and Garrison urged Bobby Kennedy through the liaison to go public and to tell the American people, because that was the only way that he could save his life. And the liaison reported back that Bobby Kennedy said that if he wins the California primary, he will announce in Chicago he's going to reopen the investigation into the death of his brother, and he was eliminated. Martin Luther King was eliminated a week after he said that Vietnam was the most evil war in the history of warfare, and Malcolm X was eliminated once he began to preach the fact that whites and blacks can live together. It was after a trip to Mecca, and he was coming out against the war.
Right, very good. Did you show this film in Los Angeles?
Yes, as a matter of fact, there are only two places in America we've had the opportunity to show it in a theater, in spite of the fact that 8 weeks ago it won the San Sebastian First Prize for Best Documentary. It's gotten rave reviews every place. The Los Angeles Times says the best documentary ever made about the assassination. And even though NBC comes under serious attack for what they did to Jim Garrison in trying to discredit him, in a very illegal way, one of the anchormen from NBC in New Orleans, who was not a Garrison fan, told his viewers that it is by far the best documentary ever made about the assassination. In Los Angeles, it's playing at the Lemley Theaters, and they have screenings on weekends at 11:30 on Saturday and Sunday. And what I have decided to do is that because people are going out at odd hours to see the documentary, I show up at the theater whenever I can to answer questions, because it's impossible to watch this, Paul, without having all kinds of questions or even comments. As a matter of fact, one woman who was a reporter for, I believe it was United Press, knew Clay Shaw for 30 years, knew Garrison, she's from New Orleans, didn't like Garrison, called him the Jolly Green Giant. She came to the screening at the Lemley in Los Angeles. She left in tears because she was sorry that he had died and she didn't have a chance to apologize after all of these years.
Have you approached the people in Dallas, Texas, who put on the annual JFK symposium event down there in Dallas?
No, I haven't. I would think that if they were interested, quite honestly, they would approach me. But I have interest in the work that those people are doing. And the truth is, Paul, I never started out as an assassination theorist or assassination buff or any of that. I started out primarily as a storyteller. And I came here from Canada, and one of the things that I always loved about America is there was always a sense of rooting for the underdog, always a sense of fair play. Until Jim Garrison arrested Clay Shaw, there was no sense of that. And when I began to learn the facts, I felt the man had not gotten a fair hearing, a hearing that the Constitution would guarantee a person. And so I just needed to get the man's story told. And I'll tell you quite honestly, I spent 12 years not getting it made. When I finally got the funding, I only had 10 weeks to make it. But if I had 6 months and enough funding to do another documentary, a part two, because we had 2.5 hours of interviews, and he named names, I could probably do a documentary, Paul, that would have people arrested.
Good, good. Have you read Michael Canfield's book, Coup d'Etat in America, that shows the pictures of Hunt and Sturgis in Dallas and Hunt and Sturgis in the Watergate?
Yeah, that book was co-authored by Alan J. Weberman. I've read almost everything on the assassination, absolutely everything.
What do you think about the tramp photos, those photos? You remember when Garrison took them on the Johnny Carson show and held them up before the camera and Johnny Carson leaped on top of Garrison and tried to take the pictures away from him? Have you seen that footage from CBS?
I haven't seen the footage. I recall the show, but I have an audio tape of it. You can get an audio tape from Bob Groden, who co-authored High Treason and who was one of the on the staff of the House Select Committee on Assassinations, who did wonderful photographic work with the Zapruder film and all kinds of other footage. The tramps were not arrested. They were escorted. And there is some confusion as to the possible identity. There are a couple of guys in Texas who think one of the tramps is a CIA agent named Charles Rogers. I don't know if you've read The Man on the Grassy Knoll. But Garrison said, there are certainly keys. These tramps will lead us somewhere. But Garrison said it didn't matter who pulled the trigger. He gave me the name of somebody that he thought was one of the trigger men. He also gave me the name, and he showed how he tracked him down in the Warren Commission. It was really something out of Sherlock Holmes. A guy from Chicago who he is convinced was the one who ordered Ruby to kill Oswald. The reason we didn't mention some of these names were twofold. First of all, I couldn't afford to defend myself in lawsuits. Garrison was no longer in a legal position to help defend me or himself in a case of a lawsuit. That's why I say if I had sufficient funds, I would risk that by hiring good private investigators to track all this material down. Garrison's contention was these guys are just mechanics.
Oh, that's true. I mean, I really like Jim Marr's approach where he says you have to ask why Kennedy was killed to get to who really did it. I mean, Hunt and Sturgis may have pulled the trigger, but it was the people pulling the strings of Hunt and Sturgis that were, to me, more important getting to. I stumbled across some stuff indicating George Bush was involved. I don't know. Have you seen those stories, like the ones in the Nation magazine and the Austin Chronicle?
I've heard all those stories about Bush. One problem that I have with naming names on such a high level is that it makes people nervous to think that their leaders could be involved in that kind of thing.
Thank you to the San Francisco Mime Troupe for that musical interruption. And now we continue with the interview with John Barber, the producer and director of the great Garrison Tapes interview. I mentioned earlier, and I'll mention again, if people would like to get copies of the Garrison Tape, they can contact John Barber directly at his office, the phone number being 702-435-8303, or you can fax the order to him at 702-454-4166. His address in Henderson, Nevada is 2282 Trafalgar Court. That's his office in Henderson, Nevada. Your zip code is 89014. If you need the information, you can call me in my office. My name is Paul Kangas. My number is 897-0153. And as I mentioned earlier, the great interview with Garrison is going to be on your local TV cable in December 1992. Check your local listings for time and place, or you can get a copy of the Garrison interviews at 702-435-8303. And now we continue with the interview.
When you were talking to Garrison, did you get into the period when Kennedy had the CIA down at Lake Pontchartrain arrested for their third secret planned invasion of Cuba? Garrison was right there on the edge of it when Kennedy had the CIA arrested. Did you touch on that?
Yes, it's not in the documentary, but we touched on it in the interview. It was FBI agents reluctantly arresting CIA agents and not prosecuting them.
Right, right. And a lot of people don't... it's in the movie, actually, the JFK movie, but people don't realize what it is going on there, actually. I know because I was involved in the invasion of Cuba in number two. And when I saw that in the film, I was so glad that it was in there because a lot of people don't realize the whole history of the CIA involvement in Cuba. But was there anything significant that Garrison told you about the arrests of the CIA people down there, how it might have affected his case? That was 63, just before Kennedy was killed.
Yeah, it in no way affected his case. It was just he was laying the historical groundwork as to why the assassination occurred. He felt that at least 35 people at a minimum had to be aware of what was going to happen in Dallas because it was a military-style operation that involved some in the Dallas police because, he says this in the documentary, it was virtually a no-risk operation. And we got a tape of Roger Craig, who was a Dallas police officer, who said that they were ordered by their superior not to provide protection for the motorcade.
Okay. When you did the interviews with Garrison, what year was that?
I did the interview in the fall of 1980.
And at that time, Garrison was probably feeling pretty down. I can remember from his books, he wasn't feeling too happy. So he wasn't aware that he might become a national figure, a national hero, actually, before he dies, with Oliver Stone not only making a movie about his investigation, but putting Garrison in the movie. How did Garrison come across when you interviewed him? Was he up or down about the possibility of actually solving the case?
Garrison was probably the most American person I've ever met in this country, and next to Buckminster Fuller, the brightest, most well-read man I ever met. I asked him how he could possibly, knowing his political background, his conservative nature, and having been in the military, a respecter of authority, I said to him, what made you ever think you could take on the federal government? And Paul, without missing a beat, he smiled, he said, I guess, John, as a kid, I saw one too many Frank Capra movies. But by the time I talked to him, he was resigned to the fact that America had been taken over. He said, I guess I'm under the mistaken delusion that I live in the country I was born in. I mean, it was very prophetic and poetic. As a matter of fact, at one point he said to me, and I thought, Jesus, this guy's really way out. He said, don't be surprised in 10 years or so if we're not best friends with the Soviet Union and they find the greatest sweetheart deal in the world was one between the CIA and the KGB to keep everybody in business. And it wasn't until just a few months ago when I was putting together the documentary, I came across that, and I almost fell over because I had forgotten all about it. But I remember being absolutely shocked at the time. But he never, ever talked about the assassination. He avoided the subject, and he says in the documentary, this is the first time I'm talking about it because I don't like to talk about it. And the reason for that was, I said, how can you not be in an institution, or how can you not blow your own brains out with all that information you have in your head? And he said, simply, I don't think about it anymore.
John, do you remember where you were when John Kennedy was killed?
I remember absolutely where I was, even though George Bush and E. Howard Hunt and Richard Nixon seemed to have some difficulty. I was on the porch, balcony of a friend's apartment in North Hollywood, California, working on some jokes. At the time, I was a stand-up monologist, and I'd worked the Hungry Eye in September here in San Francisco, and I was booked back to open the week after the assassination. And so I was working on jokes about Kennedy when Kennedy was shot. And I remember my wife is Hispanic, that some of the names of people arrested on the scene had Spanish surnames. My wife's first comment was, God, I hope the Mexicans had nothing to do with it.
You were working at the Hungry Eye. When you were there, did you ever talk to Lenny Bruce? He used to do a lot of what you'd call stand-up, trying to insult people and trying to get the information out about the Kennedy assassination.
I knew Lenny Bruce very, very well. The sad and the movie Lenny, I think, was an absolutely reprehensible movie in spite of the fact Dustin's a brilliant actor. It wasn't really Lenny Bruce's story. Lenny at one time told me if he had to do it over again, he wouldn't do it the same way again because he had no house, he had no car, he was in his early 40s. And Jim Garrison, in the documentary, I asked him that question, and he very reluctantly says he would not do it over again.
In other words, Garrison felt that he did things backwards?
No, it's not that he did things backwards. It's just that he said, I paid too high a price. And his children had never heard him say that, and they saw that in the documentary. They started weeping.
Yeah, I think that Garrison wakes up a little late in life, like many of us who get involved in things like that. I mean, I feel the same way about some of my life, that I bit off too much at the wrong time and chewed it the wrong way.
Well, the thing is that once you get your teeth into it, you really can't let go. It's like Garrison lost the Clay Shaw trial, but he said that the conspiracy part of his case was the weakest case, but he had him dead to rights on perjury because he got Dean Andrews on perjury 6 months before. Dean Andrews was sentenced to 6 months for saying that Clay Bertrand was not Clay Shaw. I mean, so he had a locked case, but when he tried to bring him Clay Shaw to trial for perjury before lying before a grand jury, the federal government stepped in and prohibited the prosecution, and he had an airtight case. But in Garrison's case, he, in spite of the fact that the world was against him, the people reelected him. And at that point in the documentary, you see how illegally the federal government tried to harass him.
In the interview with Garrison, does Garrison ever talk about the actual personal sacrifice that he had to go through?
Yes, and it was that personal sacrifice. I mean, in the movie, Sissy Spacek and Kevin Costner are walking out of the courtroom hand in hand when in actuality Jim and Liz divorced over the pressures of the his pursuing the assassination. He said he had no choice. It happened in his jurisdiction. It was his job. But some of the kids who were also interviewed in the documentary said that, you know, there were other stresses in the marriage, and maybe this just really accentuated it.
Right. Do you feel that Garrison died a hero after all of his struggles, with the way things turned out just before he passed on to the next stage? Many people look at him as a hero.
I believe that posthumously, probably 5 or 10 years from now, Jim Garrison will get some kind of medal or recognition from the government of the United States for what he did. And I think another one will probably go to Mark Lane, and I would hope that Mark would get his before he dies. I think Rush to Judgment is probably still the definitive critique of the Warren Report.
Right, very good, John. How about, what's the chances of us getting the case really reopened now with a Clinton government? What's your take on Clinton's possible being able to be pressured into really reopening this case, or?
To take your first question about Clinton being pressured, I don't think Clinton would have to be pressured, because I'll tell you that they are receptive, and I'll tell you why I know they're receptive. So Gore stepped forward, and Gore said, young man, the House Select Committee concluded there was an assassination, of a conspiracy of unknown origin. And he said, and I think that they might be right.
And this concludes that interview with John Barber. This has been Reality Sandwich. And Paul Kangas, your host on KPOO. See you next Tuesday or Thursday. It's at Tuesday at 7:30 a.m. and Thursday, 10 a.m. every week. Thank you.
Can you guess just who we are? One part business, one part war. We own the weapons, banks, and land. Call us Armageddon Man. There is less, but we want